and all kind of fruit and say, we have an old-fashioned tomato, Long Island potato, but yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today.
Ah, yes, my grandmother used to sing that all the time as I was a kid. And we even had a player piano that had the piano rolls that we would all sing along to.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. How nice. I like that.
Did you sing in the morning?
So that's one of my favorite songs. And I tried to teach my great niece this song, and because she speaks very properly, she can't say, yes, we have no bananas. She says, yes, we don't have any bananas.
And has she figured out how to put that in, you know, squish it in?
I haven't tried doing this with her lately.
Oh, okay.
We're gonna when she gets older and understands all this stuff, we're gonna taunt her with all the stuff that she did when she was 2 and 3 and 4.
I know, and she will resent you for it. tell your story. Good morning.
Which
tell your story.
Which story is that?
Your mitzvah story.
Oh, so down Eastern Parkway from where I live. I live in Park Slope, which is at the far western end of Eastern Parkway, is the world headquarters of the Lubavitch Hasidim, otherwise known as Chabad. Chabad is all over the world. I mean, everywhere in even godforsaken places, they're there to serve Jews who live in those godforsaken places, or here in Brooklyn, which is not at all godforsaken. And their mission is to get less observant Jews to become more observant. Now, since I live very close to the world headquarters, I am, I don't want to say harassed, but one step below harassed by young boys, teenagers, all the time. They come over to you and say, are you Jewish? And if you say yes, they're going to ask you to do some kind of ritual that is required of the day, whatever that is. Now, for an ordinary day that isn't a Sabbath, Jewish men say their morning prayers with what are called tefillin, or I think, what's the word in English? I'll think of it in a second. There is an English word for it. But tefillin are these little boxes that have prayers written in parchment inside the boxes. And one of them goes on your forehead with a leather strap that's part of it. And the other one goes on your arm, the arm opposite whatever you use normally. If you're right, it goes on the left. And these straps get wound around your arm and onto your hand, actually in the shape of a shin, which is a Hebrew letter, standing whatever. In any case, I'm unloading my groceries in front of the house from my car, and they're all in the lobby now, and I'm about to get back in the car, and these two boys come over to me and say, you're Jewish? And I somehow could not say, no, I'm not, that day. Sometimes I say, no, I'm an Arab, and I walk away because I don't want to be bothered with whatever they want me to do. It didn't dawn on me that they wanted me to lay tefillin. So I said, they said, oh, you have to do this. I said, no, I don't have to do this. I'm parking my car. I don't have my coat on. It's cold out. I don't want to stand here in the street with tefillin on. They said, okay, get in your car. So I got in the car, half out, half in. I had late tefillin, and you have to say a couple prayers. I didn't do my whole morning prayer thing. I think they were surprised that I knew as much as I actually did, because I don't do it doesn't mean I don't know how to do it. And it was nice. They begged me to do this because they had not met their quota for the day. they're supposed to go out there and do this and that, and I don't know. I didn't want to hear the whole story. I just know that they said, oh, we really, really need you. We have to go back now. We haven't met our quota.
So, I understand.
Very polite boys, by the way. So as they're walking away, they say, now this is going to be the best week of your life.
And meanwhile, even though I've said, hey, it's only Monday
It's only Monday. I'm already having a bad week, but because actually, technically, the week starts on Sunday,
correct,
doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it was a very emotional day. I'm not going to go into it. It was a very difficult day yesterday. The day, 2 days after I laid tefillin. So we'll see. I don't know. You tell me that the stars are not exactly lined up for me this week either.
I say no. That's more of a general thing, but that also is an opportunity in so many ways. So now we will talk about hummus.
Well, not yet.
Okay.
Because there is a Jewish holiday coming up this week. It's called Purim. It commemorates the saving of the Jews from the evil Persian prime minister of King Ahasuerus, Haman. If that sounds familiar, it's because one of the foods we eat for Purim is Hamantaschen or Hamantaschen, and so their name for this evil man. But Purim is a funny holiday because it's become the Halloween for Jews. And I'm on the phone on Skype with my niece who lives in St. Louis the other day, and her five-year-old, who's a girly girl, comes in and out of the picture. She's trying on costumes for her Purim carnival. Because they, even Reformed Jews these days make a big stink out of, maybe even before Orthodox Jews.
It's a
Everybody
fun one.
Makes a big stink about Purim these days. What?
It's a fun one. That's the thing. You
it's
know?
A fun holiday, and it's a lot about eating things that you normally don't eat because right. There's a lot of sweets. So, in fact, there's a tradition called Shalach Munis, which means you give gifts of food to your neighbors. And in fact, I receive Shalach Munis every year from one of my Chabad friends. He brings over a basket with a bottle of wine. Usually his wife bakes some cookies or Hamantaschen. I'll get to that in a second. Some dried fruit. I don't know what all will be in my basket this year, but it's always nice to get Shalach Munis. And to celebrate Purim. I did a couple of years ago, I don't know if anybody remembers, I actually went to a Purim celebration at the synagogue in Naples, Italy. And that was an experience because they do, at least the men of this synagogue, do it the old-fashioned way. They read the story of Esther. She's the key character, the heroine of the story. It was quite nice altogether, except that I was somewhat offended that the women of this congregation had decided to make Purim into a feminist holiday, apropos Queen Esther being the heroine of the story, and they excluded the men. And we were not, it's one of those synagogues where the men and the women do separate things, but usually the women are up in the gallery cheering and screaming and doing all the things that the men do downstairs, because when they read the story, it's called the Megillah of Esther, like the expression, the whole Megillah means the whole story. So the Megillah of Esther, every time they mention the evil Haman, you're supposed to scream and yell
and
use noisemakers.
Right.
So we did that in the synagogue, but the women had decided this was a feminist holiday, and they did an exclusionary celebration with children in a room that we were not allowed to go into. I thought that was not nice. Anyway, food Purim. So there's the Hamantaschen, which are triangular shaped pastries filled traditionally with either prune paste, lekvár, it's called, Hungarian thing. You can buy this in a jar, by the way, if you want to make old-fashioned prune Hamantaschen. They sell lekvár in jars. And the other filling, traditional filling, is poppy seeds, mohn in German and Yiddish, M-O-H-N, mohn. And mohn, poppy seeds, of course, were certainly a food of ancient Persia, because poppies grow all over the Middle East, and I'm sure they discovered poppy seeds are something that's high in protein and edible. So the reason we do poppy seeds for Purim is that Queen Esther became a vegetarian. Now I need to tell the story of Esther quickly. Esther was a very beautiful and charming Jewish woman, and she was selected by the Persian king to be a queen, one of his queens, and she became his favorite queen. You know, they had harems in those days. But because she was kosher, and by the way, secretly a Jew, she became a vegetarian when she went to court so that she could maintain her kosher status, because not eating meat, not eating anything that required special attention by a Jew. So, but vegetarian, in fact, a lot of kosher young Jews are, in fact, vegetarian these days. It's a very easy way to be kosher.
Right, and that takes us into a much longer story because you've got to keep things separate. Just what people need to know is...
Let's not start with what being kosher involves. It involves a lot. But being, if you're a vegetarian, if at home you're a vegetarian, and maybe you have cheese and eggs, but you have no meat, so you can always have cheese and eggs. Anyway, point is, she became a vegetarian, and poppy seeds were, in fact, one of the foods that she supposedly ate while she was at court. And so we fill Homentashen with poppy seeds. Now, the story about the word Homentashen, nobody really knows where this comes from, but I was always told when I was a kid that they were Haman's hat, that Haman wore a three-cornered hat, and that these three-cornered pastries enclosing whatever filling you put in were after his hat. But the word Tashen means pockets, plural. So Haman's pockets, I don't know why they told us they were hats, when, if anything, they were Haman's pockets. They're not really, they're pockets. Of the pastry itself is a pocket. Well, it could be the pockets. We don't know. We don't know where they were.
We know that, like,
we know that they refer to Haman, but who knows if they're pockets, if they're hats, whatever. So in any case, Esther goes to court and hides herself. Haman is threatened by Mordechai, who is another advisor to the king, and by thinking that the Jews are a threat to the throne, and he convinces the king to annihilate all the Jews. When the king finds out that his favorite wife is also Jewish, because then she goes to him and she says, "I'm Jewish," instead of annihilating the Jews, he kills Haman. That's, in brief, the story of Purim, which has evolved into Halloween for Jews. So the kids get dressed up in costumes. Very often they get dressed up as King Ahasuerus or Queen Esther. So my little niece, 5 years old, is preparing herself for her Purim carnival, which I assume is Wednesday. Purim starts Wednesday night and goes through Thursday. Maybe it's Thursday. And she tries on her little mermaid costume. She tries on another little dress, which I thought might have been her princess dress from Frozen. And she's not happy with how any of them look. And she's saying to her mother, "What am I going to do for carnival?" It's a five-year-old. And we decide finally that maybe instead of wearing a costume, she could just do makeup. Of course, her 7-year-old brother comes by and says, "You're too young for makeup." But anyway, she decides, oh, that's not such a bad idea. She'll make up her face, whatever. And now she's decided to paint her toenails and her fingernails because she's never allowed to do that. But for Purim, she could do it. And, of course, she painted her nails 3 different colors. So, purple, the usual girly girl colors, purple, pink, and green.
Of course.
Yeah. So, anyway, I don't know how we got distracted by that, but I really wanted to say that if you look at my book, Jewish Home Cooking, you'll find what I consider the ultimate Homentashen recipe. It's like a little too long to go into on the air, I think. But what it's filled with is nowadays they can be filled with almost anything. And I think various kinds of fruit jam, apricot, raspberry, like that, are the most popular. But for years, when I was on New York radio, I would get requests for, "Do you have a recipe for chocolate Homentashen?" Now, if you make Homentashen and you have a favorite dough, use it. And what I filled my Hummantaschen with to make chocolate Hummantaschen was a very simple brownie recipe. And it works really well. So you've got a sugar cookie dough enclosing a brownie.
That's
good.
Could
be bad.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good, right?
I'm looking at your chocolate filling. It's pretty easy. So, you know.
So the chocolate filling is very easy, but, you know, by the way, my cookie dough is from a friend's cookbook, because I could not improve on her cookie dough. Carol Walter's Best Cookies, or Great Cookies, it's called, Great Cookies. If anybody has that book, it was a very popular book when it came out. I used her Hummantaschen dough, and then I think I made up the brownie filling. I don't remember where. That didn't come from anywhere, especially. Yeah, it's a nice recipe. So what is the brownie filling? Do you want me to do that?
Sure. Because it's really yummy.
All right, well, I have to read it myself because...
All right, you want me to read it?
Yeah, if you want to. Yeah, I guess.
You'll do it
I
better.
Want to talk about another Purim food that we don't even need a recipe for.
All right, then do that.
And very
that.
Few people, maybe very few people know this, except certainly the Chabad people do, because they still eat this for Purim. Chickpeas, another food that Queen Esther supposedly ate when she was at court as a vegetarian, were chickpeas. Of course, she probably ate hummus, you know. I mean, hummus goes back to ancient times. It's very possible she ate hummus. And hummus, of course, is like the national dish of Israel. And now it's becoming like the semi-national dish of America. You can't go into... I know a supermarket that has a whole refrigerated case just with various kinds of hummus, meaning chickpea paste flavored with this, that, and the other thing. I'm all for traditional hummus. But the fact is, chickpeas aren't only for hummus. They're for many other things. And if you go to some Hasidic homes for Purim, they'll serve you chickpeas, whole chickpeas, drizzled with honey. And by the way, this is a very nice combination, if you like honey, if you like chickpeas. The chickpeas have that earthy flavor, and honey is an interesting contrast to the earthy flavor of chickpeas. And by the way, when I was a kid, and I'm sure you remember this, Jill, growing up in New York. No, you grew up in Buffalo, but you know New York. And maybe you were here too late for this, but the old dairy restaurants, Rappaport's and Ratner's, and there were many others, B&H Dairy, well, that was sort of a diner kind of place, but real restaurants served chickpeas on the table, like delicatessens put pickles on the table.
Yep.
The dairy restaurants would put chickpeas on the table. Yep. It was called Arbus.
It was Danny's Hideaway had chickpeas, black olives, and celery.
Well, that's a combination. So yeah, you can just drain a can of chickpeas if you want to rinse them. You can, and then put them in a bowl with salt and pepper, and that's a really good snack. Like eating nuts. And that's what we would eat while we were contemplating the menu and deciding what to eat. Do you remember that?
Oh, I do.
Absolutely. Did you work your way? I'm guessing Marshall sort of worked his way through.
My father used to get mad because I used to eat everything.
Yeah,
else.
It'd be empty.
Yeah, you'd eat a whole bowl of chickpeas before the meal came.
Right. So did the chickpeas, the pickles, the olives, the celery, the whatever was there.
That never prevented me from eating my meal either.
Yeah. Well, so hummus is an appropriate food for Purim. And I do very, very simple hummus with a can of chickpeas. By the way, I do cook chickpeas from scratch. I don't know if I reported this or not. I've been told many times by different people to cook chickpeas with baking soda to make them tender quicker. And I did this according to an actual recipe using baking soda that's in the River Cafe cookbook, not referring to the Brooklyn River Cafe, but the London River Cafe. And the author of this book says it can take about 45 minutes to cook. So once I got them up, they soaked with baking soda, too. I literally just went to the bathroom. When I came back, the chickpeas had already disintegrated. That's how tender they got quickly. Anyway, so I won't do that again. So you can make your own chickpeas, but in fact, at least the brand that I buy, Goya, are every bit as good as any chickpea I've ever cooked myself. So I sort of don't bother with that anymore. I do use canned chickpeas. And for the sake of hummus, I don't drain the... I do drain the chickpeas, but I save the liquid in the can. There are some people who think you're not supposed to eat the liquid in a can of beans or chickpeas, but that's a lot of nutrition you're throwing down the drain. Now, there are some cases where you don't want that liquid, but most of the time, you can use it. In this case, I dumped a can of I'm sure I've given this recipe on the air. It's so easy and quick. You dump a can of chickpeas drained into my, I do it in my mini processor. I never make so much that I want to put it in a big processor. And this is great for one can of chickpeas. I would say 2 tablespoons, but it's real. I don't measure so much as I have a tablespoon and I let it overflowing tablespoon of tahini, sesame seed paste, the juice of at least a half a lemon to start, a couple big pinches of salt, and I would say 1 large clove, super large clove, depending on how much garlic you like, or 2 cloves of garlic. And you throw that all into the mini processor and let it whirl, let it puree, adding back some of the chickpea liquid from the can to loosen it up a little bit. You can doctor it up with a little bit more lemon juice if you like. Some people like cumin in there. For a change, I put it in sometimes, but not usually. But like a half a teaspoon is enough, cumin. And there are a lot of other seasonings you can put in, but I like my purest version best. I just use quite a bit of garlic, I guess. But you don't have to. A small clove of garlic is fine, too. Anyway, when it's nice and smooth, really creamy, you got hummus. I don't put any oil in. Some recipes will tell you to add a tablespoon or two of oil. If I'm serving it, like, you know, for company on the table with things to dip into it, then I would on the top, I might actually put the cumin on the very top, just sprinkle the top. You spread the hummus on a platter. You don't serve it deep in a bowl. And you make a whirling design on top, and you can drizzle it with a little great olive oil, and you can sprinkle it with a little bit of cumin if you like, or hot pepper. I love putting hot pepper on top.
And then what do you serve it with?
Oh, you know, of course you can serve it with pita or toasted pita triangles, and if you're watching carbs, you can have it. It's very good with red pepper, celery, an endive leaf, whatever you can scrape up some with, you know, okay. Whatever you can dunk. A vegetable is good, carrot sticks, I guess. I'm not big on carrot sticks. I would, of all those things, I would prefer celery.
Okay.
So that's a good Purim thing, if you're celebrating Purim. Now, if you're not celebrating Purim, if you don't care about Purim, I have to put you on notice that Kara oranges are in the market. Kara oranges. I only recently discovered Kara oranges, but they themselves were only discovered, we think, like in the late 70s, early 80s. This mutation of an orange showed up on an orange tree in Venezuela. And this maybe is the 80s. And since then, they've been cultivated in a lot of places, including California. It's interesting about California. They're very responsive to trends. For instance, when avocados started becoming really popular, we still get almost all our avocados from Mexico, but there have been huge plantings in California. They go a little crazy in California. For instance, when they planted Zinfandel everywhere, and then, of course, they didn't know what to do with it, so we ended up with this terrible sweet white Zinfandel, that seems to have disappeared. But anyway, California cashes in on these things a lot. Pistachios, another one. They saw pistachios were becoming popular. Now we have almost all our pistachios come from California. They have a huge pistachio. And we even get shelled pistachios now. So Kara oranges was discovered in Venezuela, but they're now being cultivated in California. And I think this year may be the first year that I've seen them aplenty. So it's taken quite a long time to, you know, it takes time for trees to grow. But I don't think they actually plant Kara trees. There's no such thing. They graft Kara onto other orange trees. It is a large, extremely sweet, red-fleshed or pink-fleshed orange, seedless, on top of all those other good things. And I went to a friend's house for dinner on Thursday night, and she served Caracara oranges. She was very happy that she'd scored them. I said, oh, where did you find them? She said, oh, Costco. So we couldn't get over how sweet they were. It was the best dessert. So the next day I ran over to Costco, and sure enough, a huge bag, I think there were 15 Caracaras, and they're large oranges, were in this bag, and it was $10 for this enormous bag of oranges. We're still working our way through them. And I bought them on Friday. Well, you know, it's a lot of oranges. And also, I'm trying to control myself. They're about 90 calories, 80, 90 calories in orange. They're very high, and of course, in vitamin C, because they're oranges. But I was also happy to learn when I looked this up that they're also high in folates. A lot of us are lacking folates. And folates are not in everything. So if your doctor ever said, oh, take folic acid now. As you get older, by the way, apparently, and if you're pregnant, you need more folates. So they're high in folates, and, you know, and they're sweet, they're delicious. You shouldn't have any other excuse to eat them.
Right.
Yeah, but we're eating the ones that are at room temperature. They're sweeter.
Happy Purim. Good luck out there, and we will talk next week.
Yeah, I got to find a costume parade to go watch.
Not a problem.
Okay. Take care, kids. Have a great week.
All right.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, here on Robin Hood Radio. Food Maven from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton. Flawless Catering and Event Planning, HathawayYoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. And on the web, JARestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, Rubiner's.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.